Today on the show, we attempt to settle a topic that's been hotly debated since the fall of 2023. Was Starfield a masterpiece, a disappointment, or somewhere in between? Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Mike Ferris.
And I'm Connor Howard. And we're back. It's been a hot minute.
It's been a while.
You and I haven't hosted an episode together in a good long while, but I'm excited about today.
I haven't appeared on Lore Party in a very long time.
It's been a bit of a slow period for us. We're getting back into it though, for sure. I mean, all of us had you know, things distracting us from the mission of debating video games together. But we're back. I think in top form today. I'm a little nervous, you know. I hope this doesn't get too contentious or heated, but I will keep.
I mean, I got my boxing gloves on. I don't know about you.
We're going to keep things civil in what we are already semi-jokingly calling the Great Starfield Debate. Michael and I here are ready to present our opposing cases in the Great Debate, as it were, whether Starfield was quality or not, basically.
Yeah, we're trying something new. Typically, we like to talk about good games on this podcast, but today we're doing something different.
Yeah, we're shaking things up a little bit.
No, I kid.
we've done, I guess, like back and forth, you know, argument formats for not often, but I guess.
Yeah.
Normally, we'll just examine. Obviously, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know that normally we just examine the story content of something, or we unravel a specific. Theme or takeaway from a story or a setting, but this time we're gonna go deep into setting and story qualities and whatnot, but I think we'll be just kind of both coming at it from opposite ends of the lens, or opposite sides of the lens, I guess.
Because I think, like, Starfield, I don't know about you, but at least for me, was a very hotly anticipated game me when it was first announced.
I was hyped.
Like, way back when, with the, like, I think it was original, like, Xbox Series announcement, or not too long after that. So, it's been a hot minute. Yeah.
It was on the radar for a while.
And, and I saw, like, all the early stuff, and saw that first like teaser video with them talking about how many big worlds there are. There's thousands of planets you can go to, or hundreds. And I was like, oh no, we've played this game before. Sometimes literally.
Yeah.
But you know, it's still with high anticipation, and I left a little bit colder than I think you did.
Yeah.
To put it lightly.
Yeah. I totally get that. I think a lot of the consensus was there was some degree of overhype happening, and so when it finally landed this past autumn, you know, Starfield was met with, I mean, a lot of, it definitely had a player base. It didn't completely fall flat, but I think it didn't quite get knocked out of the park like people were expecting. It wasn't a home run that, like, it was kind of I guess when you're waiting for a game so long, generally people are going to just, oh, it's going to be so good, it's going to be so worth it. It fizzled a little bit. I mean, I guess my perspective is, I definitely noticed some flaws. I'm not here to argue that it's a perfect game by any stretch, but I'm here to present what I liked about it, I suppose, and we'll go from there. But that's...
Yeah, I think we're going to be both introducing a little bit of both sides of the column, although one of us ends on different sides. But
of course.
To take care of some housekeeping before we get into the Great Starfield Debate of 2024, just a few housekeeping notes. Of course, we love to hear from our listeners, so send us an email at podcast@loreparty.com, and we're on social media platforms at @lore_party. And yeah, I think it's time, Connor.
I think it's
time for the debate.
I think it's almost time. You know, we're just a quick sneak peek of how this is going to break down. We'll both kind of start with our first impressions, and then a little later on, we'll get really further, really dig down into our primary takeaways, our main arguments, and That's all coming at you after this really quick ad break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors, so stick around.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
And welcome back. So, Starfield. Bethesda, even. You know, like, we have one of the biggest developers in the history of games, at least in this sort of like big AAA space. And I think right off the bat, I'm curious what sort of, maybe like, what's your history with Bethesda games? What's your sort of first impressions of maybe even pre-release of Starfield? And then what are some of your early impressions going in, hitting go?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it. My history with Bethesda, and that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's really important here, because Bethesda is a, you know, renowned developer. I think everyone knows, everyone's familiar with Bethesda's work. And what the thing about Starfield is, it's very much a Bethesda game. You really do feel their DNA in this. And for me personally, that goes back to, actually, that goes way back to Morrowind, a game that you and I both appreciate.
Yep, same here.
Yeah. So, like, when Morrowind was a current game, I'll say, you know, when it was new-ish, I was a little too young to really appreciate the nuance. I wasn't as, it was a hardcore game. Like, it didn't hold your hand. There were things about it that flew over my head. So it wasn't until Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion came out when I was in high school, I guess. That's when I really dove deep. That's when I was officially a Bethesda fanboy, because I got absorbed into Oblivion big time. I liked Morrowind, and I've gone back and played it since then and appreciated things about it, but like, Oblivion was the game that really grabbed me. Of course, Fallout 3 came out when I was in college. Again, I just lost days upon days of my life to that game. Played the shit out of about Fallout 3. Skyrim, of course, got into big time. Fallout 4 I loved. So yeah, like, I've kind of been showing up for Bethesda games for a while now. And so yeah, of course, right. like a lot of people, when Starfield was coming down the pipeline, I was waiting with my backpack open at the other end, like, give it to me, let me have it. And cuz this is important, I'll touch on this again later. This will be important throughout, because I love sci-fi. I'm a huge sci-fi nerd. Like, I've always been fascinated with these stories of, you know, just people making their way in the galaxy or whatever, kind of like finding their road through the stars, and just being that sense of freedom that space-born sci-fi stories kind of impart on you. I've always been a huge fan of those. And so the idea of like a Bethesda game in space, and then they tell me I can build my own spaceship and shit like that. Like, I was ready to go. I could not have been more ready.
Right.
So I guess getting into when I first started playing Starfield, my first impressions, I guess I say all that to make it clear that I was ready to buy in. Like, I wasn't coming into Starfield needing to be convinced to like it. I was very much primed to like it. And so I think one of the things you heard from some reviewers early on in Starfield's release was people were kind of pointing out how it's hard to buy into the game, or it's hard to get into it. The beginning is a little rocky, and that for me wasn't really a problem. I was there for it from the get go. I was like ready to go. So I was kind of like willing to just go with the flow and see what the game wanted me to kind of, I was ready to just go for the ride, I guess. But there was that contrast there, because, you know, I mentioned Fallout 4, Fallout 3, Oblivion, and Skyrim, games from Bethesda that really emphasized and incentivized early exploration. Like, when you get into those games, you're kind of kicked out the door and like encouraged, go wherever, do whatever, find your way. Starfield was a little bit different in the sense that it wasn't a hard rail, but it did incentivize you might want to just follow the main quest for a good while. And that's also something I was hearing from reviewers too. And so it was kind of like, you do have to sort of stay on the bunny hill for like a few hours at least in Starfield just to get your feet under you. And I was fine with that. Like, there was a bit of incongruence there. That's something I noticed early on. Like, it wasn't quite like Skyrim in space or whatever, but I definitely, again, mentioning Bethesda DNA, like early on, it was very clear, like, oh, this is so many Bethesda conventions are just in full form here. In fact, like after, you know, raiding, clearing out my first little outpost from space pirates, like, okay, well, I've done this song and dance before. I've killed raiders in the ruins of the Commonwealth of Boston before. And like, I'm definitely getting this, like, okay, it's Fallout 4 in space kind of vibe, the gunplay. But like, that didn't mean it was bad. It just was familiar. No. And to me, it was like, this is familiar, but to others, I could see how this could be stale. You know, one man's familiar could be another man's stale. I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
And like, but for me, it was like, oh, the guns feel good. The movement is good. Like, the atmosphere is good. I like the ships. I love the feeling of, you know, just flying around. So like, everything was working. Early on, I wasn't blown away, but it was working. So I guess that's what I'll say was like my first few hours. And that kind of leads me to my next point I had ready here, was like, combat mechanics were good. The ship-based combat felt good. The mechanics were fine. They weren't revolutionary, but I was fine with it, you know? So like, everything felt competent, but like, it didn't feel, again, coming back to like the hype phase of how long we've been waiting for Starfield thing, I guess it didn't feel like another level, you know, like what didn't feel like something completely new and of its own quite yet. It still felt like, okay, this is a Bethesda game. Like, that's kind of what I felt like. This is good. I'm having a good time, but it's definitely a Bethesda game. So,
I think anyone would think the same
right
from that.
That was kind of a common refrain for sure. But what was keeping me going though for the first few hours? I was like intrigued in the main quest. I was like, I was invested in it. I was like, okay, yeah, let's find out more about what's going on with these kooky artifacts. And you know, I'm in Constellation now and doing the things and whatever. but for me, what was really driving me forward was I just loved the vibes. It was a vibes thing. And for me, what I still like about this game, it's a feels thing. It's a vibes thing, because just the feeling of like walking to the starter ship, you get the Frontier, very iconic design, very NASA punk and like kind of cozy and functional and cute, like walking to your ship, climbing into it and blasting off into the stars. Like, it never got old. That never got old to me. I just loved the vibes of it. So like, things like that, the little things were really keeping me going for a while there.
Right.
You know, when I was learning about like surveying planets and getting side quests and tons of side quests and going off on your own.
Yeah.
Like I was hitting that wall, finding out like, okay, building a base on another planet and like just exploring to kill time. Like, those are things you could do, but they weren't really incentivized the way that I think a game that got compared to Starfield a lot early on was No Man's Sky. That's a very easy comparison to make. That was a big parallel. So No Man's Sky obviously has completely different systems in place to like incentivize exploration. Like, hey, go here, do this, figure it out, you know, find your own way. And going off on your own and sort of aimlessly exploring in Starfield was not as rewarding. And I think a lot of people expected it to be. It's kind of like, oh, well, what am I doing here? What's the point of this? So like, that was something I ran into. It's like, okay, well, I guess I'll just keep doing quests then. So it was kind of like, once I realized that if you just focus on quests, you're going to be taken on a worthwhile ride, is what I learned after like the first 10 or 12 hours, is what I kind of, it's like, it's one of those things where if you play ball with the game, kind of meet it halfway to like what you expected and what they want you to do, like how they built the game to be experienced. That's kind of what I fell into, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any thoughts on that so far. I have a couple more things to finish up with.
I think actually like our early impressions, actually a lot of it falls under like, from what you said, the parallels are there for me. Because I have pretty much the same history with Bethesda. I had the same kind of expectations going in. And then as soon as you hit go, make your character and everything. Like, actually, for me, like I started hitting like the road got rocky even before the game even started. For me, because like when it came to the character creator, because there's so many different like traits and things
the
like
backgrounds
that
you can, and whatever, yeah.
Yeah, the backgrounds you can assign yourself, the different religions, and they're expecting you to make decisions about the world and about how you want to be in this world before you know anything about it.
Yeah.
So, fair. Yeah, so it was a thing of, I forget like some of the like you know, exact details, but it's more of just like, okay, do you want to follow like this faction or this faction right out of the gate? And I was like, I don't even know who these people
yeah,
are.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And so, yeah. And then like, and the because it's a brand new like universe, you can't really fall onto different tropes in the same way that like you could do with like a Star Trek or something like that of like, oh, the Klingons, they're the combat people, the Federation's the science people, and you know, that kind of thing. So right away I kind of felt like I was a little bit in a little bit of a no man's land of like, I'm not sure what I'm actually like, who am I actually making? Because it's not me in a sense. So I tried to find like, so I tried to like create a character that was as close to what I would like to be as I could. And then going in, I had like a little bit of a similar experience of like, okay, like I'm, you know, mining these minerals, doing the hitting these sci-fi beats. And then when you get that first artifact, it feels like to me that the game is kind of missing a few like narrative beats along the way, because you find the artifact and then you're immediately like in the Chosen One story a little bit. So it's it's sort of like the notes are firing at the wrong time in the wrong rhythm. Like the music's there, but the notes are wrong in a way. So even though I kind of felt a little bit of the same as you, it was for me a very tentative experience of, I'm not sure what I'm actually supposed to be feeling here, because the characters are reacting in ways that I, as a player, do not. Like, I don't feel like a chosen one. I just feel like I found some like cool rock.
Right.
And then immediately you're in Constellation and everyone thinks that you're like, not necessarily a mythical hero, but you're special, but you're not special. You're just a dude.
Yeah. It's, I think that's another Bethesda convention we've kind of come to expect, is that, oh, you're the sole survivor of a vault. Oh, you're the Dragonborn. Oh, you're the Nerevarine. And I guess with Starfield, maybe there was an attempt to be a little bit more, you are playing as the everyman. Like, you are just a normal person who just happened to like become involved in a journey of discovering what's beyond the stars and like, you know, the unity and all that we can get. I've beaten the game only the one time, and like the thing about the unity and the Starborn and stuff like that, like I see what you mean. There's a bit of a, the story felt, like I'm trying to think of like what main quests of Bethesda games did it better than Starfield. And I feel like Fallout 3 had a pretty engaging main quest. Oblivion had a pretty engaging main quest. Starfield is, it's just kind of like, hey, we're just explorers, and we're just following following our clues to their natural conclusion. And I guess the only special thing about your character in Starfield is that there was a reaction when you held the artifact, which typically doesn't happen to people. Yeah. Like, you got visions or whatever. So like, I guess with a game like this, there's that attempt to make the main quest intriguing, like you're curious about it, but not so urgent that you feel like you can't explore and do side content, I guess. And that's a tricky balance to strike, I guess, if I was going to defend it.
Yeah, because like I was like feeling these like things like even just a little bit, like a couple days ago, as we were like formulating this episode, I was like, okay, what am I actually feeling here? And the kind of similar to what you just mentioned of like what Bethesda games are doing it differently, I went and replayed like about 10 hours or so of Skyrim, and I was like, okay, like how does that game start? Like what is the actual drive? What's the inciting like incident of the game? And to me, it's like there's a good nice chunk of time between you being on that cart being, you know, about to be executed and everything. Yeah. And then you slay your first dragon, mm-hmm. and then you capture the mm-hmm. soul of the dragon. Yeah. That's a very like, whoa, like I thought I was just a dude and there, and like it's a similar formula, yeah. but I think like the chunk of time and the way that that Skyrim sets up your initial quest, it just feels like there's more meat on the bone. There's a little bit more mystery. Like I don't know what happened to me, so I want to find yeah. out where those characters are reacting to me in Starfield that I personally am not feeling.
Yeah, it's, I will give you this. I definitely think the main quest in Starfield could have been paced better. You mentioned the narrative beats of Skyrim feeling like more of a A to B to C to D adventure of like things are happening that keep pushing you forward. Whereas with Starfield, it's like, I liked the fact that I felt like an ordinary guy doing extraordinary things. That's the thing I mm-hmm. liked most about the Starfield quest line. But what I'll give you is it could have been paced better so that it didn't feel like quite so much of a fetch quest. Like it felt like you're just kind of going out and, you know, picking up your groceries, you know, in the sense of like, okay, well, there's an artifact here, go get it. Okay, I guess I'll go get that artifact. Well, yeah. there's a temple here, go get a power. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll get that. So like it could have been paced better and like it could have been strung along with story beats better. But I still came away with that feeling of I'm just some fucking guy who used to be a miner and now I'm like unraveling the secrets of creation, basically. There's something nice about that I appreciate, but like, yeah, it doesn't quite push you along as effectively as Bethesda has done in the past with their main quests. So I'll give you that.
No, that's very fair. And I'm actually curious, like once you sort of get on that main mm-hmm. quest, those things going, like how are you reacting to like visiting these different planets, visiting these cities, meeting these new characters? Because for me, like when I first started off, like at going to New Atlantis, going to the Lodge and everything, like these worlds, at least the very big, like starter worlds, they don't have that like it factor mm. that I'm looking for in a sci-fi mm. story. There's no, like the world had no majesty mm. to it. Like, and it was like a lot of like people just like grumbling about their day jobs. Yeah. And it's like, I'm here for like grandiose, yeah. like big space adventure. And everyone's just like punching in for the day and punching out. It's like, don't you realize you're in space? Like, look how cool it is.
That's fair.
And that incongruity to me, like felt wrong in a way where it's like, the constellation and the people in it feel like totally separate from the common people like on Mars and other worlds where they're just, well, I'm just a miner getting drunk at the bar.
That's I'll give you that. I hear that. I understand that. My counterpoint is what I appreciate mm-hmm. about the atmosphere of the early game when you're like, yeah, like you said, going to the early locales, like the set piece cities and planets and settlements, like New Atlantis on planet Jemison, Aquila City, Neon on Alpha, on Bulleye Alpha, cities and, mm-hmm. and of course Cydonia on Mars, like you mentioned. Like these were places that they all had unique character to them. Yeah, maybe none of them felt like a space age utopia necessarily. Like New Atlantis kind of mm-hmm. at least strove for that. New Atlantis, what I like about New Atlantis actually, it's actually a pretty cool thematic thing they did here, where on the surface, New Atlantis is a shiny, impressive city full of, you know, rapid transit systems and, you know, and nice green parks and happy people going about their lives and shiny, tall buildings. But underneath that, you have the Well, which is like the underground, like kind of subway station looking dwellings where the poor people live underneath New Atlantis. So there's that narrative twist there, like, we've made it to space. Mm-hmm. You know, humanity has found a new home outside of Earth because Earth is gone in this storyline. In this setting, Earth is extinct, like no longer capable of supporting life. So like there's a new home among the stars for people. And Jemison, the planet, is like, you know, another Earth almost, has the same type of biosphere essentially. And New Atlantis is like, we can start over. This is our second chance. We can be that shiny beacon on the hill for civilization. You know, humanity survives. And yeah, it has that outward presentation of utopia, but the existence of the Well underneath, and like, you know, there's still like kind of an underclass of people who don't have citizenship in the United Colonies and whatnot. What I like about that.
Yeah, that stuff's fascinating.
Yeah, what I like about that though is that it makes it clear, like, even though this is a far-fetched situation, it's kind of like a fantastic circumstances, it's still a human issue. Like, even if we escape Earth and find a new home, our problems still follow us. Like, our problems with inequality or nanny state sort of dystopia still follows us. And you see the contrast in Aquila City, where you have the Free Star Collective. I do like that you pointed out, like, at the beginning when you're hearing the terms like United Colonies and Free Star Collective, like, who the fuck are these people? Like, what are those things? I don't know what either of those mean. And yeah, you have to sort of discover it along the way, but when you see the contrast of the Free Star Collective in Aquila City, it's like, it's just a bunch of like buildings and a wall and some walls around it and a dusty savanna outside of it. And what's funny is, like, yeah, the United Colonies with their new Atlantis city, it's like, this is probably a crude analogy, but it's almost like the United Colonies are the blue states in space, and Aquila City and the Free Star Collective are the red states in space. So, like, Free Star Collective is like, they've got that red state spirit of, like, you know, small government, leave me alone. I want to live on my farm and shoot critters with my space shotgun and be left alone. And it's there is
they're Wisconsin.
They've got it's almost like a Texas vibe of, like, we are our own thing. Let us have our own thing. Yeah. And the Free Star Collective is very much built on that rugged individualism, like, small government thing. And the United Colonies, on the other hand, is very much, no, we're going to provide everything for people, but only if they have money and, like, whether they like it or not, sort of like top down heavy structure sort of thing.
There's a small print there to the benefits.
Yeah. So I had a very long rambling answer to your prompt of no, but I, that those are things I noticed later on. So I guess, we can touch on that later. A little bit more. But I will say by wrapping up my initial thoughts early on into the game, my last point I want to make on that is that there were bugs. On the negative side, I do have to say there were bugs. There were some, it's, and if we want to talk about Bethesda DNA, if we want to talk about, you know, Bethesda conventions.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The dish.
Bethesda is kind of notorious for putting out very buggy games, and fixing them later with patches. But I got to give them a little bit of credit here. Starfield, for having some annoying bugs of its own, honestly, compared to, like, Fallout 76, God forbid, even Skyrim and Fallout 4, like, those were even buggier.
New Vegas,
yeah, that too. Well, that was Obsidian, but Bethesda published it, so anyway. But no, like, I got to say, for a Bethesda game, Starfield was actually pretty stable. I didn't have that many crashes. I didn't have that many bugs that were game breaking. The bugs I did find were more annoying than anything. They weren't, like, crippling. I think the one that bugged me the most was probably the fact that when I built a ship later on, this is further into the game when I was able to build my own ships. I had an armory section where they're like one of the habitation modules you can put in your ship is an armory. And there's, like, gun racks you can put weapons on. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm going to decorate the inside of my ship with, like, my gun collection. I was psyched about that. But when I built my ship and I was, like, ready to get in there and decorate it and personalize it and go from there. And I opened I tried to interact with the weapon rack and it just wouldn't let me put guns on it for, like, no reason, no discernible reason.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it was just some bug that wouldn't let me use my weapon racks. I was like, well, fuck. And so, like, I thought to myself, listen, just give it a couple weeks and they'll patch it. Like, just come back later and it'll, and sure enough, it was, it got patched. Like, that bug was kind of
good.
So I got to give Bethesda a little bit of credit for tightening up their bug issues just a bit more than they normally do on this one. So I'll say that much at least.
Yeah, I didn't encounter any major bugs. The one, like, I found some cosmetic things, which is typical for any open world game. But the first mission involving the scanner and finding the artifact, the scanner broke. Like you just could, like you were trying to find like anomalies, right. But the anomaly wouldn't register on the scanner. Oh, and so I just had to like basically just like look it up where to go and eventually got there and just like brute force my way through that first quest. And all the other ones after that have been fine. But like that was the only like major like roadblock I had in terms of bugs. Most of the time it's just been like stupid cosmetic stuff, or like I'll enter a conversation and your companion is like 2 miles back, but still involved in the conversation. I get that all the time.
I still see that. That's a good one.
But yeah, so I think those are our first impressions. I think we're going to come back, get a little deep dive into more narrative, more finer details of the Great Starfield debate after this quick break, and we'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
All right, we're back, and I think it's time for us to get into really the meat of this discussion.
Yes.
The primary arguments in the Great Starfield debate. We've touched on a couple of our core points earlier when we were discussing our initial first thoughts on the game. But Michael, I invite you to lay out your core case against Starfield. I want a good clean fight. You know, keep it above the belt, but
ding.
And then I'll have a rebuttal and we'll go from there. But walk us through it.
Yeah. So I think like I spent a lot of time thinking about this, and like after about like 40 hours of gameplay, in like knowing what I felt, and I was like, I had to think about it. I was like, why am I not loving this? Because I think it's fine. We joked about like how it's like Starfield. I think Starfield's bad. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's bad. It's fine. I wrote in my review on my blog, it is a very functional piece of software. But I think after a while thinking about it, I think the core misgiving that I have about Starfield is I think that overall, I don't think the world ever really commits to itself. Mm. And I'm not sure if Bethesda really understands the world that they tried to make. Mm. Like I mentioned in our first segment, like, the people like Constellation, a few other characters, really, and even just aesthetically, the game treats its world with a ton of beautiful reference. Like going to space is awesome. You know, finding a planet, landing on it is awesome. Mm-hmm. Very few characters treat the world that way, because a lot of the characters really just, they're just going about their daily lives, doing their thing. I don't know if it's like just a lack of different perspectives or really what's going on, because like nothing really commits. Like narratively, the game has like deep connections to like 60s, 70s sci-fi. A lot of Star Trek type things in the narrative, a lot of Star Wars, a lot of like other 70s films. I have, you see right here, I got my Star Trek poster right here. Yeah. Like I'm a Mass Effect poster here. I like space.
Absolutely.
But it's, the world is just treated with such a banality by a lot of characters that I can never feel like that real big sense of awe. Like you mentioned with No Man's Sky earlier, a very common point of comparison. Right. The first time that I get into my ship and I blast off into space with No Man's Sky, I'm in. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel totally committed to the world. And because of the way that they treat their world, it really encourages just poking around, like, what's this animal? What's this planet? What's this system? What's this space station that you're on? And I think because of the hyper quest focus of the game, it really just kind of, it's almost like a hyper capitalist machine in a way where it's just like, I'm going to do quest and get gold. And that's it. Like, so much of that is like, the game feels really disposable in that way. And like, unless you just stick to the main quest, and there's a lot of really good stuff in that main quest and some of the faction stuff, everything else is effervescent in a way. And so just a ton of things get pulled in a million different directions. And the biggest victim of that, I think, ends up actually being the world. Even mechanically, where the game has a very generous fast travel system. And there's been a lot of talk about the fast travel system and the loading screens. Yep. And typically, I'm fine with that. Like, I understand that games are software. Like, I'm not a fool. Mm-hmm. But there's just so much disconnect between everything that I never feel like I'm fully immersed in its world with all those things. But I think mechanically as well, it's almost like you're reading a nice book and then you get interrupted every few minutes in that way. Okay. So, yeah, it just, and all that kind of combines to a world that feels very dry and even passionless. Mm. Like, I get, it almost feels like the impression that, like, this game was not created by people who ever, like, laid down in their front yard and stared into the stars. Mm. in a way. Wow. This is made by people who really love Excel spreadsheets. Wow. All right, they played a lot of EVE Online, but not in the good way.
Damn, that's actually that actually cuts deep, I think, because like EVE spreadsheet the game basically. But you raise a good point, because I do feel like further into the game, when I was really off and running and I was like kind of established, and I had my head around the game. I knew what I was doing at this point. I did find myself on several occasions just kind of grinding quests or grinding repeatables, like just doing random shit to make money, like credits, so that I could build ships, because that's what I actually liked doing. And I'll get into that later. But
yeah, that stuff's a ton of fun. Yeah,
but like, no, to your point, I think like, there's a soulless quality to that, of just kind of like, I'm just sort of going through the motions to some degree. This is slight pushback. It's half an agreement, really. The thing about NPCs not really feeling like they like the world they live in, I guess. I want to shout out Sam Coe, my favorite companion.
Sam Coe's the best character.
Yeah, Sam Coe is the MVP of...
No comparison.
Absolutely. I'm glad we can find common ground on that. So, Elias Tufexis, if you're out there, I'm a big fan of your work. Amazing actor. He is the voice of Sam Coe. Yeah, best NPC in the game, best companion in the game. Thing about him, like, he... Like, as a character, Sam Coe, like, just genuinely is excited by exploring and just being out in the stars and whatnot. It's like, if he's on your ship, and he should always be on your crew with Cora running around being a little scamp. She's great. Every time you, like, lift off and, you know, go back to space, you can sometimes hear Sam in the background. Never gets old. he's like, excited to be there with you, like, going on your space adventures. So, yeah, but otherwise, I guess the only counterpoint to that is, like, when I encounter characters who are just sort of going through the motions and, you know, like it doesn't occur to them that they live in a epic space opera, they just, as far as they're concerned, they're just going about their lives or just, you know, doing their 9-to-5. To me, that communicates a world that is lived in. It has like a realistic quality to it of like, I guess that's immersive to me, but to some it feels hollow. So, you know, there's a subjectivity to that. So I understand where you're coming from that, because it's something I notice as well. Like, it's just kind of, this is just people in space. Like, there's really no romance. There's not much romance. There's some romance about it. I think the characters in Constellation have a they have like a aspirational relationship with space travel and exploration that basically every other NPC in the game does not have. So it can feel kind of like,
yeah.
And we're just here. We're just, fuck it. Who cares?
Yeah.
We're just here.
Yeah. And like, I think even like you mentioned characters and what makes Sam a very good character. Mm-hmm. And what I think what leaves me also with Dry with a lot of characters is that, yeah, in that kind of sense, like, a lot of the characters just feel, and this could just be because I'm tired of the way that relationships are handled in a lot of games, but it feels like every character, it like feels like a chess piece where it's like you have Sarah, who's just the leader. Oh, but she has self-doubt because of past failures. You have Andrasia, who's like, she's the mysterious one with a dark past. Right. And you have Mateo, who's the idealist kid type.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah.
All these characters are so trite to me.
There are some tropes happening, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and what makes Sam really good is like, yeah, I like, that's the kind of, like, he almost acts like a character, like a player surrogate, where it's like, yeah, like, this never gets old. Like, yeah, and like, if other characters are excited, like, they act as a really good, at least for me, they act as a really good guide for how I should be experiencing the world. Like, I think of, like, even, like, Mass Effect. Like, all the characters, I mean, they don't have, like, the plucky energy, but they all have a really good, they provide a lot of guidance for how the player can see the world in many different perspectives.
Interesting.
And for me, it's like, because, like, the characters are kind of tropey in that way, there's not, like, you have to really, really, like, kind of like what you mentioned earlier, you just have, kind of have to accept it to be allowed to be guided in that way. And I think I just kind of bounced off of that.
That's fair. Yeah. I find it, I think that's a very interesting point. The point of characters acting as lenses through which to experience the game world. You know, like when you meet certain characters, they reflect certain qualities of the setting. And yeah, well, I guess in Sam's case, like, he reflects that spirit of adventure that I think Constellation as an organization is supposed to do, but maybe that didn't quite land the way Bethesda was hoping it would, maybe.
At least not for me.
No, yeah.
Like, I could totally see someone just being like, take that kind of earnesty and just going with it.
Sure.
And I just couldn't follow it.
Yeah. It's just kind of like certain things that the game tries that just don't land all the time with 100% reliability. And that's, you know, not much you can do about that, I guess. But if I were to, I'm sorry, did you have anything else?
No, go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So
rebuttal me.
Rebuttal. So yeah, like I said, I'm not here to defend Bethesda really. I'm not here to defend Starfield as a perfect game. There were definitely some things I noticed that, I would change about it that, you know, it felt, there were things about it that I felt were uninspired or a little half baked. But for me, my main defense kind of boils down to something pretty petty and stupid, but for me, it made all the difference. But I'll tell you what it was. What really made Starfield click for me, and the game mechanic that I've already mentioned that really drew me in and kept me the most invested. I've played Starfield for about 300 hours. If Steam is being correct, if Steam is accurate with my tracking, and that. The thing that kept me going was the ship building system. I already mentioned, like, I just, dude, building ships was so fucking fun. It's a lot of fun. But I had to get there, though. I had to play for a while. Like, I had to finally get the skill points into the ship designing tree, basically, the ship design skill. And it also takes a lot of money, so you had to, like, get really established before that particular game mechanic becomes really feasible to do. But around that time, after, like, you know, I was like getting close to 50, 60 hours in the game roughly, when I completed a side quest that I actually thought was pretty cool. It's a quest called Overdesigned, where you you help Walter Stroud, one of the members of Constellation. He's also the owner of the Stroud Eklund Shipyard. You help him design a new model of Starship for his company. And you join like a focus group, basically. Well, not a focus group, but like a committee of like engineers and, you know, sales executives and whatnot, who, and if you ever heard the the term or phrase "designed by committee" being kind of a nightmare phrase for people in, like, you know, defense industry, aerospace industry. You can see why with this quest, because you got like, well, it needs this. No, it needs this. And like, well, it's not going to sell if it doesn't have this. And like, it's so dumb. It's kind of funny though, because like, you can navigate that quest by like getting everyone to, you can arbitrate, you can mediate, you can get people to agree, or you can sort of like pick a design decision and go with it and kind of pick a direction. Basically there are two outcomes of that quest. One where the ship becomes a low cost, you know, entry level, no frills, anyone can use it, anyone would buy it. It's, you know, the budget model of the ship where it's kind of uninspired.
The Toyota Corolla. It's,
yeah, the Toyota Corolla of starships, basically. And it just gets pushed out there, then, okay, whatever. Or there's the version where it's like a behemoth of a fucking ship with like every feature imaginable crammed into it. Kitchen sink, basically, approach.
Yeah.
It's got all the cargo you want. It's got giant engines. It's got advanced shielding. It's got, you know, sensors, and it's everything in one. And I had good persuasion skills by then. So I was able to get the second ending where you have the fucking gigantic over-designed ship, and you get that ship as a quest reward. That's like, you know, given to you for free. And so I had this ship. I was like, I hate this thing. It's an eyesore. It's a monstrosity. I cannot be caught dead flying around in this thing. And so it was like,
you bought a Hummer.
it's like from The Simpsons where Homer like designs a car, and people were making when the Tesla Cybertruck came out, people were kind of comparing it to that, basically. Like, it's
a better comparison.
Yeah, it looked like that. And so I was like, I got to do something about this, man. So I'm not even kidding you, I spent literally days in the ship designer just tweaking and like, how do I overhauled this thing. I just swapped out the parts to make it a little bit sleeker, a little lighter, a little bit, you know, just, I had so many fuel tanks I didn't even know what to do with. I'd strip those out. So like after days upon days of just overhauling and redesigning and tweaking this thing, at the end of it, I had a ship that not only fit my playstyle, but it aesthetically was exactly what I wanted. On the interior, it had everything I wanted, had all the rooms I wanted, had like captain's quarters, had an armory, had a crew lounge, it had an engineering bay, it had the cockpit I wanted. It was beautiful. It was a masterpiece. And I kind of like, after I was done overhauling this quest reward ship, I looked back on it, I was like, holy shit, I can't believe how much time I just put into Starfield just doing all that. And so I guess that is what clicked. That's what clicked everything together for me, because at that point I was fully immersed. I was like, I'm living out my fantasy of kind of being that wandering hero in a flying fortress among the stars. Like that, I guess, like, you know, the shows I love, like Firefly, The Expanse, mm-hmm. Star Wars, the Millennium Falcon thing, like that appeal of the characters living on their ship. The ship is their home.
Yeah.
That's what was really appealing to me. And so I had fully realized that sort of inner fantasy, and I was like living that out in Starfield. And like, that is what really catapulted me through 300 hours. Like I barely made it to 100, and I was like kind of running out of steam. I was like, I don't know if I want to play this game anymore. And then I did all that with like the ship building thing. I was like, I'm back, baby. And I was like another 100, 150, 200 hours in the game. No problem. So I guess like, I point out that example of the shipbuilding mechanic because that was the moment I officially loved Starfield. And I think like with a game like this, every player kind of has to arrive at that moment or not arrive at that moment kind of on their own. Like either they find that moment or they don't. And some players, I think not everyone's going to do that, and it's fine. It's unreasonable to expect everyone to play the game the same way and get the same thing out of it. And also like a game like this, the reviews were saying things like, you got to give it a while before it really clicks. You got to give it a chance to kind of grab you. And I know that's on some level, I know that's fair. You got to give a game a chance, but like at the same time, it shouldn't take you like 12 to 15 hours to decide if you like a game or not. Like, at a certain point you got to call the game. Like, you got to call it a day. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, so like no experience is universal. Mine's definitely not. Yours isn't. So like,
Yeah.
Again, I guess that brings me back to the beginning where my defense is really a feels and vibes thing. I just, you know, if it clicks for you and makes you happy and like you got something out of it, great. Otherwise, no harm, no foul, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess bring it all together, putting a bow on it. I thought that, you know, there were some, as a package, Starfield had, you know, it's because, you know, it's a new year. We're looking back on it, like kind of a postmortem thing. What did it have going for it? What didn't it have going for it? I like to think that there were some memorable quests for sure. Like the Crimson Fleet quest chain was amazing, by the way. I love that one. Even like the other faction quests, like the Vanguard and the Rangers were pretty cool. There's cool stuff to do. Solid shooting mechanics. I got really immersed into shipbuilding, obviously. But like, yeah, like I said at the beginning, Starfield wasn't a home run, you know, it had things I liked about it, but wasn't perfect for sure. So, I guess what's a little disappointing though, was like, there was so much about Starfield that worked, but even a lot of the stuff that worked, felt left over from other Bethesda games. It's kind of like a little bit of a, like it's like you're eating mom's leftovers for two nights in a row. It's like, or like your mom and dad made lasagna and it's great. You love it. But like after the third day of eating it, it's kind of like, okay, well, it's still good, but kind of like something new here.
Yeah. It's still comfort food.
So, I guess, you know, there's no way I could pour 300 hours into Starfield without enjoying it. Obviously, no question.
No one can.
So it's flawed but enjoyable. I almost found myself in a similar position to when I was playing Anthem, when Anthem was new. I was like,
oh wow.
I was telling people, listen, I want to tell you that you should play Anthem, but I can't in good conscience tell you. But I like it. I know it's not good, but I like it. I don't know. I feel like
I think we're the only two Anthem fans on the internet currently.
Michael, so. We should do Anthem episodes. We should talk about how the Anthem started.
Oh God, I don't know anything. I don't remember anything about Anthem anymore.
Was there even a story? I don't even know. I'm sorry. But no, I will say lastly, I did beat the main story of Starfield somewhat recently. I had to go back and do it cause I was so sidetracked with faction quests basically. And like, I was actually pleasantly surprised by how it wrapped up. I'll try not to spoil it too heavily, but, I guess official warning, if you don't want to know anything about what happens at the end of the main quest of Starfield, here's your official spoiler warning, skip ahead a couple minutes, but you know, the conclusion of reaching the Unity where all possible multiverses basically converge and you're given the choice of like, if you enter the Unity, you'll become Starborn, like a person made of pure energy who can travel to other multiverses and experience the same thing over again from a different perspective or whatever. But when you do that at the Unity, you're given a glimpse into what you leave behind, basically the universe you originally were born into and lived through in the first playthrough of the game. What was really interesting about it though, is explained to you as the player that by becoming Starborn, your energy dissipates and disperses into this universe when you leave it behind. And so everything good or bad that you did, you leave behind with you in this universe. And you're given a glimpse into, you know, like the faction quest storylines that you wrapped up. Like, here's what happens because of your actions. And here's the positive impacts you make. Here are the negative impacts you make. Here's what happens with your friends when you leave. So like, I actually found myself like kind of touched by that. There's a poignant point to be made about every action having butterfly effect kind of thing. Every action having ripple effects upon the universe, and you leave behind both good and bad when you venture forth into the next multiverse. So like it all came together. I think at the end of the day, things came together despite some loose, you know, components here and there. Like Starfield was held together by duct tape in some places, but it was still a good ride for me, at least. Like, I guess that's my final thought. So,
yeah, and I guess kind of on that too. Like Starfield has like, and I'm sure there's gonna be expansions and everything. So like, there's a ton of like real potential and opportunity there, and kind of like what you said with like this game, like for your opinion, like it was a really good vibes click for you. And I think what is like the crux of my sort of overall feelings is like, I just don't think I go to sci-fi stories for what kind of sci-fi story that Starfield is, sure, is telling, sure, in by and large. Yeah. Because I am a big, when it comes to space, at least, I'm a big dreamer. I can lay out in my apartment's yard, although I wouldn't, there's too many dogs there, but I can lay out there and stare at the stars for hours, yeah, and think of the most wondrous, weird stuff that you could possibly imagine. Mm. And playing through Starfield, I probably should not have even expected it in a way, because yeah, that's what No Man's Sky is for. Mm. That's not the kind of games that Bethesda makes. They make role-playing games that have quest lines, yeah, and cash rewards.
Yeah.
And yeah, like for me, it just never quite clicked. There's plenty of possibilities. There's mm-hmm. plenty of wonderful opportunities. And I think because the game is so big and so ambitious, and yet so rooted back in its past, mm-hmm. that everything kind of felt to me like 80% there. Mm-hmm. Like the combat is 80% there. Mm-hmm. Most of the powers are not that useful.
That's fair. That's actually very
most
true.
Most of the weapons.
It's very true.
Yeah, most of the weapons are not that useful. Yeah. The ship is awesome. And if you want to get into building like you mm-hmm. did, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Just fast travel everywhere. It doesn't matter. So like everything felt like just like not quite fully in there,
yeah,
and it was a really frustrating experience because I see so much good stuff there, like I mentioned, with like all the stuff that occurs in the ending, mm-hmm. like really awesome, incredible stuff, yeah, like learning about why the Earth is the way it
yeah.
is,
yeah,
maybe some of my favorite stuff in that game narratively.
That's pretty cool, yeah, yeah,
and never quite clicked and never quite gelled. There's plenty of great ingredients,
yeah.
It just got pulled out of the oven too quickly, and
yeah.
you just kind of have a half-hearted meal.
Yeah. No, I'm 100% respectful of your position. I don't agree with all of it, but I think you make mm-hmm. some really good points about, like,
sure.
I mean, obviously we don't agree with all of it, but like I think that's 100% fair, because at the end of the day, like I have to wonder, what would Starfield have looked like if it had even another 6 months of development time, a year of development time? Like, would we see something more ambitious? Would we see something a little bit more out of the box for Bethesda? But like, I think you summed it up pretty well. Like, it dreamed so much, it reached so high, but there were definitely points where even I felt like it was being held back by just, well, like we said at the very beginning, that Bethesda convention, just like kind of things that they're just, It's a wheelhouse, I guess, or a comfort zone, even
yeah.
comfort zone of Bethesda's development process. But yeah, no, I'm glad we could talk this out, because I was losing sleep over the idea that you just didn't give this game a fair shake and you were just being a hater.
Oh.
But no, you're not a hater.
No, I mean,
I don't think you're a hater. I think you have legitimate grievances. I'm fine with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I wrote a review yeah. on my blog right. at quicksavequickload.com. Yeah. I wrote a review on that not too long after I sort of had a really big chunk. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like I had everything. Mm-hmm. And I like now that I played it more, I wrote that I think prematurely. Mm. Like that was a very scathing,
oh,
very
yeah.
depressing review yeah. that I wrote.
Well, I mean, when you're
like
yeah, I mean, when you're let down by something so hard at the beginning, like I think that's understandable. Like, oh man, this is not what I wanted out of a game I've been waiting years for. And I think you're not alone there. I think a lot of people felt that way too.
No,
yeah.
no, and like. I see a lot of people like criticizing Starfield for completely baseless reasons. Mm-hmm. I think because like the game is not like it's not terrible. It's a good solid game. And I think like what I think our conversation here really comes down to is I think we actually ended up pretty close to the same
yeah.
in some regards.
There's common ground here for sure.
You don't, you're not. Yeah. You're not like, it's not like your favorite game of all mm-hmm. time. It's not the worst game of all time. Mm-hmm. It's not the most impressive game of all time.
Yeah.
But it's a really good time, I think, overall.
Yeah. I Speaking of the Expanse, I mentioned the Expanse earlier. I built, if anyone is familiar with that show and those books, I built the Rocinante as my player ship. The Rocinante, amazing, iconic ship of sci-fi design. Built that. I might build the Serenity from Firefly soon. I built
that'd be fun.
I built the Ghost from Star Wars Rebels. That was pretty fun. Like, you can just the shit you can do. I mean, yeah, I know that it's kind of sad that like the 75% of this game's appeal for me was just building ships, I guess. But no, like,
hey, they put it in for a reason.
Exactly. And yeah, I'm curious to see, like, you know, what Bethesda tries to do with story DLC, which I assume they're going to be doing at some point. I at least hope so.
I hope so
at least. Yeah. Because, yeah, there were some threads that could be tied up, but, yeah, I think, I think we had a great talk here, and I think we've both taken a hard look at the conventions that we look for in sci-fi stories that are rewarding to us. And those things are all going to be, those things are all going to be different to every player or consumer of the media, but you know, I think there's a commonality there. Like, we all want something out of our stories, and we all want something out of the worlds we explore, and that's going to look different for everybody. Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Twitch, Instagram, and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
See you in the stars.
See you in the star field.
Oh, that's better.